2020 is a big election year in Wisconsin. We've got races for legislature, Congress, and the presidential race in the fall. That's a race in which Wisconsin's expected to once again play a pivotal role in the Electoral College. But we're just 36 days away from Wisconsin's spring primary, which includes primaries on both sides of the ticket in a special election to replace Sean Duffy in the 7th Congressional District, as well as a primary for state Supreme Court and several primaries for school boards, municipal boards, and county boards. But are you ready to vote? Are you registered? Are you sure? Voter security, voter access, and voter registration is our topic today on the West Side. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach, and as always, we'd like to hear from you throughout the show. Are you worried about voter security? Are we doing enough to make sure voters are eligible, or have those voter security measures suppressed eligible voters from participating in democracy? Call us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be joined by four individuals who are working with nonpartisan organizations that are trying to educate Western Wisconsin voters and help them register for the polls. They are Salika Duxworth-Lawton of Eau Claire, president of Uniting Bridges of Eau Claire and a member of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Civil Liberties Union, Laura Voss of Eau Claire from Chippewa Valley Votes, Karen Voss, from Eau Claire of Chippewa Valley Votes, Patty Hurd of Siren from the League of Women Voters of the Upper St. Croix Valley, and Lisa Hind of Prairie Farm from the group Barron County Votes. But the one big recent news event that brought the issue of voter registration to the fore is the court decision last month that would purge more than 200,000 voter records from the polls, with thousands of those records affecting individuals here in western Wisconsin. Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson has been following that story, and he joins us now. Sean, welcome to the West Side.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me.
So this started out as an effort last October by the Wisconsin Elections Commission to send postcards to past voters in an effort to clean up the voter registration list. Seems innocent enough. So how did this end up in court?
What happened is that these voters, these more than 200,000 voters, had been flagged by this multi-state system that Wisconsin is a part of that matches up addresses that are parts of other government databases, like the Department of Motor Vehicles, for example, against addresses that are part of the voter registration database. And when there are addresses that don't match, then they are flagged by this system, and so the state sends out these mailings to these voters, and this is what the state did back in October, saying, we think you've moved. And, at the time, that mailing did not say, we think you've moved, and therefore we're going to take you off the voter registration list. It let them know that they'd been identified. It encouraged them, if they had in fact moved, to update their address. But the plan that the state had back then was they're going to leave all these people on the list who didn't respond. They were not going to automatically remove them until 2021. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, a conservative think tank law firm, didn't think that was the correct reading of the law, got involved, sued, and that's kind of how we got rolling on this legal battle that we're in right now.
What's the rationale for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty for pushing for a quicker turnaround on purging these roles?
Their basic argument is that there's just no room in the law for the Wisconsin Elections Commission to decide not to purge this list. They say that the law is clear. When these people are flagged by this system, the state sends out these mailers, and then they have the people that were flagged by the system have 30 days to respond. If they don't, if they don't update their addresses, or if they don't indicate that, no, they actually have not moved, then they are removed from the voter registration list. That's the argument of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
And that's the argument that won the day with Judge Malloy in Ozaukee County last month. His ruling, pretty clear, if an address isn't verified, it should come off the books. Now, the League of Women Voters has filed a suit asking that Judge Malloy's ruling be reversed. What's their rationale for those and for others who want to keep those names from being purged?
The League of Women Voters was not allowed to get into this initial state case. And so they turned to federal court with their lawsuit. And really, their lawsuit is kind of more focused on the Wisconsin Elections Commission than anything. Their big issue is that the Elections Commission, if Judge Malloy's ruling is allowed to stand, if these people are removed from the voters list, then you have a situation where the state, the Elections Commission, sent out these mailers to people, said, we're not going to remove you from the list, and then would then and turn around and remove people from the list. You know, so their issue is with the Elections Commission telling people that essentially their names were safe until 2021, and then under this court order, they'd have to turn around and take them off the list anyway. They're saying that that is a violation of their U.S. constitutional rights, 14th Amendment rights, and should not be allowed to stand by the federal courts.
We're visiting with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. We're talking about voter access and voter security, and specifically with Sean, we're talking about that court case in Ozaukee County in which a judge ruled that more than 200,000 voter records should be removed from the rolls after the Wisconsin Elections Commission sent out a postcard asking if the person had moved. Now, there have been a number of changes, Sean, to voter eligibility rules in the past decade. Why has access to voting become, how has it become such a political, volatile political issue?
I think it is specifically in Wisconsin because our elections are potentially won around the edges. You know, our races are just so close here compared to other states. I mean, if you were in a state that was deep red or deep blue, a story like this might completely fly under the radar. You know, I don't know that it would get the attention that it's gotten here. But if you just look at Wisconsin, we had, you know, our last presidential race was won by Donald Trump. Wisconsin was won by Donald Trump by a margin of less than 23,000 votes. You know, if you look at Governor Evers' win over former Governor Walker in 2018, it was a bigger margin, but not much. I mean, it was just over 1%. And the state Supreme Court race in 2019, you're looking at a margin of around 6,000 votes. And this goes back to, I mean, the 2000 and 2004 presidential races in Wisconsin were even closer than the one where the state elected Donald Trump. So we're an extremely close state. And so then when you start talking about removing thousands, or in this case, potentially a couple hundred thousand voter names off of the registration rolls, you can imagine where that could have electoral consequences. And then you have Democrats in this instance are saying, look, a lot of these names who are flagged as having potentially moved live in places that vote Democrat. And so they're concerned that this action will end up disproportionately hurting them because some of these movers are in cities where they get a lot of Democratic votes.
So the timing of our topic today is particularly interesting because there is some activity today on this case. What's next?
Yeah, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has asked the judge who filed the initial ruling in this case, Judge Malloy, to find the Wisconsin Elections Commission in contempt of court. And that'd be an extremely rare case. I mean, you know, I don't think I've ever covered a situation like that in Wisconsin over the course of all the sort of voting disputes that we've had over the years. But the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty is saying that when Judge Malloy made his ruling, that the Elections Commission really had no choice but to turn around and follow it. The Elections Commission has met twice since Judge Malloy's ruling, and each time they deadlocked 3-3 on what to do next. Because the Elections Commission, while it often agrees on things, it is split evenly between three Republicans and three Democrats. And so on what has become kind of a hyperpartisan issue like this one, it may not have been viewed that way earlier this year, but it is now. They're voting 3-3 on how to proceed. And so if they're deadlocked, the state, the Elections Commission, can't act. Will is saying that's enough. That's contempt of court right there. Judge, you need to step in and fine these commissioners up to $2,000 per day. You know, we haven't seen that before, but they're saying that this would be an action that the judge could take. The state's lawyers, the Wisconsin Department of Justice, led by Attorney General Josh Call, are saying, hold on, Judge, this case has been appealed. We've appealed it to the Wisconsin Appeals Court. the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has appealed directly to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And so let's not take any action here until those appeals proceed, because there are some pretty significant rulings that could be made by those courts in coming days, weeks, or months.
Complex case. Sean Johnson, I'm glad you're following it. Thanks for taking time for your busy day at the Capitol to update this important story. Look forward to continued reporting on this case. Sean, thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dean.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. We continue our conversation about voter security and voter access in just a bit with some folks who are hoping to educate voters in western Wisconsin and help get them registered. Want to weigh in on this topic? We'd be happy to have you along. Join the conversation at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our topic today on the West Side is voter access and voter security in western Wisconsin. So we just heard from WPR's Sean Johnson about some of the recent political and legal happenings as it relates to this topic. Now I want to bring in some individuals who are volunteering their efforts to work with nonpartisan organizations hoping to educate voters and help individuals register to vote in advance of the upcoming elections. Karen Voss of Eau Claire is co-coordinator of the organization Chippewa Valley Votes. Karen, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
And Salika Duxworth-Lawton is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. She's president of the group Uniting Bridges of Eau Claire, which is organizing the Martin Luther King Remembrance in Eau Claire a week from tonight, and is a state board member of the Wisconsin chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Salika Duxworth-Lawton, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Later on, we'll hear from Lisa Hind of the group Barron County Votes and Patty Hurd from the Upper St. Croix Valley League of Women Voters organization about efforts they're making in their area in the areas of voter registration and voter education. So we've heard from Sean, heard about that court case. I'd like to get your takes on the order by Judge Malloy in Ozaukee County that the list of 200,000 voters should be removed from the rolls. As you both represent nonpartisan organizations in what has become something of a partisan issue. Salika Duxworth-Lawton, let's start with you. What's your impression of what's going on in that case?
Well, the case is problematic in the first place because they have not published the names of the people who will theoretically be removed. If this was really about updating the addresses and voter security, it would have made sense to have publicized the names. And there's been a lot of resistance to publicizing the names. Coming from African American history, there's been historic efforts to abuse state authority to suppress the vote and violate the 15th Amendment. And this is potentially that kind of violation. Now, the Martin Luther King program here has worked with CVV for the last 3 years. We're not reacting to the case. We have always believed the centerpiece of Martin Luther King's message was voting and democracy. Because of that, we're very proud to combine with CVV and ACLU again this year. People will be able to come. They can check their voter registrations. We can help them work with My Votes Wisconsin. We don't care what party they're from. We don't care who they are. We want them to be able to vote and have their voice heard. We are especially worried because here in Eau Claire and in northwestern Wisconsin, we have a number of the people who have been ignored by the media. When we think about people who are elderly who may have been moving between homes and into assisted living, when we think about people in rural Wisconsin, especially with the loss of the dairy farms, in areas that don't have broadband access, those are the kind of people who will also be losing their access to the vote. And to be honest, they may or may not be Democrats. We don't know. They probably, a lot of them, will be independents or Republicans. So we want to make sure everyone has access to the vote, everyone has access to democracy, because that's the Wisconsin idea.
Now, Karen Voss, Eau Claire was third only to Milwaukee and Madison for the number of voter registrations that would be affected by this ruling. What's your response to the ruling?
Well, it's interesting. It's almost deja vu from 2 years ago when a previous purge tried to eliminate over 200,000 or call into question the voter registrations of over 200,000 people. It's really, that's the event that kicked Chippewa Valley votes into high gear. And our focus was addressing that issue because there's people like me, someone who is financially secure, has a car that works, and has access to the records that I need to register to vote. I can prove who I am. I can prove where I live. Folks like us don't see voter registration as terribly difficult. But it's a whole different story when you start to think about people for whom that's not true. For, say, the individual whose car breaks down and he can't get to his job and loses his job and ends up without a place to live. If he has to go get a voter ID, he's stuck. DMVs have become less accessible to people. Transportation to them is less accessible. Those are the folks that end up getting affected by things like this voter purge. One of our missions when we got started was automatic voter registration, because that is a process that would alleviate situations like what's happening now and what happened 2 years ago.
Many of the cities most affected by this ruling are college towns. Andrew Dowd reported in the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram last month that postcards were sent to 11% of registered voters in Eau Claire, 15% of registered voters in Menominee. Nearly 1,000 cards were sent to River Falls addresses. Karen Voss, if those cards are being sent to students who no longer live at the address on the postcard, why shouldn't those records go away?
It's not so much a matter of, we all want to have accurate voter records. The problem is that there are not only people who have actually moved, but a good number of people who deserve and are legitimately registered to vote who are ending up they'll go to vote and they'll discover that they're no longer registered. And sure, you can register on site, but if you don't have your proof of residence with you or the proper documentation, you're not going to be able to do it. So those folks will give up and those votes will be lost.
There are some people who only vote in the presidential elections. Mm-hmm. They don't vote the local. And those people will be flagged by the system as well, because the initial pass is, have you voted in the last 3.5 to 4
yeah.
years?
Yeah.
So they would be eligible to vote, and that would be their right, but they would be wrongfully removed from the polls.
Salika Duxworth-Lawton, we've established that you're on the State Board of Directors for the American Civil Liberties Union. Has that organization taken a position on this issue?
Not officially, but our unofficial position is we're going to register everybody. We are working with partners and trying to make sure everybody's checking their registrations. We are registering everyone. The state's webpage talks more about what our position is, and our position really is democracy for everyone, and the vote is the centerpiece of democracy. So that's partially why we're pushing smart justice. That's partially why we're trying to return the vote to people who have been convicted of felonies. So when it comes to voting, we don't care who they are. We don't care what party they're from. We want them to be able to vote.
We're talking about voter security, voter access, particularly here in western Wisconsin, and efforts by local groups to increase voter registration to make sure people who think they're registered are registered. Our guests are Salika Duxworth-Lawton, the voice you just heard, and Karen Voss, who is from the Chippewa Valley Votes organization. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by Lisa Hind of Barron County Votes about some of the efforts that are going on in that area. But I want to switch back, Salika Duxworth-Lawton, to something you referenced earlier, the big Martin Luther King Remembrance event. Mm-hmm. It's coming up a week from tonight in Eau Claire, organized by Uniting Bridges. And we'll get more details about that event later in the show. But one aspect that's part of the commemoration this year is that voter sign-up effort. You mentioned this is the third year you've been doing that. What is the rationale to tying voter registration to an event that celebrates the values of Dr. King?
Well, one of the big things Dr. King fought for was the right to vote. When you look at the Selma fight, that was all about the ability to get people registered to keep people to vote. The Meredith March was about the ability to get people registered. 90% of what they did was getting people registered so that their voices could be heard. And when you look at a state like Mississippi, Mississippi was a black majority state in 1964. 63% of the population was black, yet less than 5% of that population was registered, in part because of the combination of the poll tax, the grandfather clause, and the literacy tests. And Mississippi was very overt that they would abuse their power to refuse to register people to vote. There is a reason why the vote is so important and why people are so interested in suppressing it. The vote is how we hold our politicians accountable. The vote is how this democracy is run. It is the heart of our democracy. If you can't hold your politicians accountable, you really have no say, and we are no longer a republic.
Karen Voss, you represent an organization called Chippewa Valley Votes, which is helping with the registration effort at the MLK Remembrance. What is your organization all about?
Well, we're a group of nonpartisan volunteers, and our focus is on empowering people to take part in the democratic process. And we do that by assisting people to understand the laws better, to know what they need to do to empower them to get registered to vote, and to be there to help them do it. My experiences are that when working with folks, say, at the community table or at the Sojourner House, at senior living facilities, there's many folks for whom this process is not clear. It's very opaque. They don't know what they need to do. They are not sure if they're registered. They don't know if their address is up to date. And so this really unlevels the playing field. It means that there's a good proportion of people out there who simply are perfectly legitimate voters, but simply don't have the tools to put themselves in a position to use their own vote. So that's what we're here for, is to get folks help them use their power, help them get registered and be legitimate.
As I look at the list of activities planned by Chippewa Valley Votes over the coming months, much of that activity is in the schools. What's that about?
Yeah, that's something that I feel we're really, really proud about. Carol Craig has been really the lead person on this effort.
And former school board president for Eau Claire area schools.
And she worked with the Eau Claire area school district to implement a policy that voter education become part of the curriculum for high school seniors in Eau Claire. And as a result of that, we started last year collaborating with the teachers to develop a program for introducing high school seniors into an understanding of both the importance of voting and the process for getting registered. So last year, working with Eau Claire and Altoona, we reached over 800 high school students and helped them become familiar with the process, with several hundred actually getting registered and the rest ready to launch when they turned 18. And we're expanding that program this year. We're adding four more schools. It's really an innovative program, the importance of educating our young people. And many of these kids they're heading off to college. They're going to go from high school to college, and they're going to learn a lot of things. They're going to make them realize that voting is important, and we want them to have the tools to be able to participate in that.
We're talking, that's the voice of Karen Voss. She's with Chippewa Valley Votes, Salika Duxworth-Lawton of Uniting Bridges, and the ACLU is here as well. And we invite you to join with your call, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, if you'd like to comment on voter access and voter security issues that are being addressed not only in the legislature but in the courts. Joining us now for a few minutes by phone is Lisa Hind of Prairie Farm. Lisa Hind is a member of the group Barron County Votes. Lisa Hind, welcome to the West Side.
Well, hello, Dean. Nice to talk to you.
Now, your group has scheduled a pair of training sessions later this month, and that's training people to assist with voter registration. So tell us about those events.
Well, we wanted to increase the number of people we had available to go out and help people register to vote. So we're holding two training sessions on Tuesday, January 28th. These are free to the public. The first one will be in Cumberland, Wisconsin, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church at 1025 2nd Avenue in Cumberland. And then the second event, which is the same event, it's just at a different time, is in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, from 6 to 8 p.m., and that's in the Blue Hills Lecture Hall on the UW Barron County campus. We have Melissa Kono, who's a member of the Election Commission Training Committee, coming up to conduct these trainings, and we're hopeful that we'll have a good turnout of people who are interested in helping us get people registered.
What are the key aspects of the training?
Well, mainly we're working with the myvote.wisconsin.gov website and trying to navigate sometimes the problems people encounter when they go on that site to register. If you have a Wisconsin driver's license and you haven't moved in the last, 10 days or so, it's not a big deal. You can just go on and register yourself. But for some people, navigating that is difficult, so we assist them in doing that.
Once you have the volunteers trained, how do they implement that training?
Well, we've gone into schools as well as the Chippewa Valley Votes group has done, and that's really rewarding. The high school students are interested and want to register to vote. We've gone on the college campus as well. We've been at local events like the Dairy Breakfast and the Barron County Fair. We'd like to have more volunteers so we could outreach further than that.
We're speaking with Lisa Hind of Barron County Votes about some efforts to do some voter education in that area. Lisa Hind, Barron County has a large Somali immigrant population. Does Barron County Votes have any special efforts planned to target that community?
Well, we have about 800 Somali people living in Barron. And of that group, approximately 200 are naturalized citizens, and so they are eligible to vote. Some of the leaders of their community are already involved in getting them registered and out to the polls, and we have assisted them in that effort. Language can be a barrier for us to be directly involved, but they had a candidate who ran for city council a year or two ago, and so I think they are interested in the process.
Karen Voss, you wanted to get in on a question for or a comment for Lisa.
Yeah, Lisa, I just wanted to, what one thing that strikes me is the power of all our independent grassroots organizations that are doing this work. I think it's we're far more than the sum of the parts. And Chippewa Valley Votes, too, training has been a really big thing, and we've worked really hard on that. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we will be training staff at the Ellie Phillips Public Memorial Library so they in turn can be ready to help citizens that walk in their doors. And there's always a need for more people who are willing to help others, and it's really a need that I don't think we're going to see an end to. When we do these school registrations, we need 40 volunteers at one time. That's a big effort.
Yeah.
And it's so good that these grassroots organizations are there to do this together.
Lisa Hind, the February primary will include both Democratic and Republican Party primaries in the special election to replace Sean Duffy as the 7th District Member of Congress from Wisconsin, Barry County, fully in that district. Does that add any urgency to your work, do you think?
Well, there are actually 5 elections coming up, including the November 3rd election.
Right.
So I think, yes, you have to complete some of this registration online at least 20 days prior to an election. You can still register with your municipal clerk up until Friday before the election, or, like they said before, on election day, but that certainly slows things down to do it the day you vote. So, yes, we're trying to get people aware of these elections that are coming up and to get registered in time.
Lisa Hine, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, and I hope people will go to Barron County Votes on Facebook, or they can come to our email, bcvotes2020@gmail.com, if they'd like to register for the workshop. It's not necessary to register, but they can ask us questions about it.
And we will drop that information on the Facebook, on the WPR.org show page for the West Side once we get the show posted, probably by noon today. So if you missed some of those addresses, we'll have that information up. So Lisa Hind is a member of Barron County Votes, which is sponsoring two events on January 28th to train volunteers who'd like to assist with voter registration. Afternoon session starts at 1 o'clock at Augustana Lutheran Church in Cumberland. The evening session at the Blue Hills Lecture Hall at 6 o'clock, the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Barron County campus in Rice Lake. And again, details are available by emailing bcvotes2020@gmail.com. We are talking voter security, voter registration, voter access here in western Wisconsin, in particular on the west side. We'll be hearing from Patty Hurd from the League of Women Voters about some events they have coming up in the upper St. Croix Valley. But first, I want to turn to the phones to Yordis from Colfax, who has some comments on the topic. Yordis, welcome to the west side. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hi, I've worked elections for a couple decades. And this purging the voting list is unnecessarily confusing. I also think that it could create a lot more mistakes than there are just having someone on a list that doesn't vote. And I don't think people should be punished for not voting regularly. I think it should be there should be a positive information out there about how easy it is to vote, how to do it. It makes it seem like some kind of obscure, strange, difficult thing to do. It's really not. It's as simple as changing your address at the post office if you move, and it's the same with voting. And I have worked at, there was a couple elections where it was just a huge turnout, and some people hadn't voted for 20 years, and they came in and their name was on the list. They lived where they lived. They were able to vote. It was fun. They enjoyed it. And that's what we want. We want people to have a good experience with voting. And so I think all the information out there should be positive about how wonderful it is to vote, how to do it, and also to give information to students in college towns to change their address if they move, and to take their name off a list if they move to another part of the state or another another state or whatever. But mostly, I think this is just a way to damage the trust in the elections.
Yordis, stay on the line. I have a follow-up question, but Karen Voss wanted to get in on this.
Yeah, Yordis, I really agree with your point that there's such potential for mistaken purges from the voter rolls, and it is unfair and very disconcerting when a voter goes to vote and they're no longer there. One of the types of communities that are often vulnerable to this are, say, the Native American reservations and small communities where house street addresses are not readily available or are not used because their mail comes to a post office box. And when mail from the Elections Commission comes in with a street address on it, it may very well not even make it to that person. And so this is just an example of how a population that's vulnerable to these purges.
Yordis, before you drop off, as a poll worker, one thing I remember, not too many years ago, it used to be that if you had moved, you simply come in with, you do have an identification, but you have a utility bill that's addressed to you at your current address, and that was enough to prove you were there. And of course, if you, if you simply lived there and the poll workers knew you, you didn't need an ID. Many of the measures that have been taken to change that process are being done in the name of voter security. Obviously, we want our elections to be secure. As a poll worker, where do you stand on, you know, the ability to, you know, what is that balance? There's a tension there.
Well, I live in a small town, and yeah. we might know someone that is voting, but we absolutely have to look at their driver's license.
Right.
Even, and people will laugh about it. But we have to do it. By law, that's the way we're trained, and we get extensive training. There are many checks and balances in the election, and I would recommend anyone who is skeptical or suspicious or whatever to get training and work an election and find out how complicated it is, all the details you have to know. And the people that work them are paid very small wages, but they are, from my experience, very ethical and very caring about the community.
Jonas, thanks for your call. Appreciate that perspective. We're talking about voter access and voter security here on the West Side. Our guests in studio are Salika Duxworth-Lawton of Uniting Bridges of Eau Claire and the ACLU, and Karen Voss, who represents the organization Chippewa Valley Votes. Coming up after the break, we'll hear from Patty Hurd, who is based in Siren, and she is an event organizer with the League of Women Voters chapter in the Upper St. Croix Valley. Are you satisfied with the voter security measures that the legislature has it implemented? Is it making it too hard to vote nowadays? Bring your voice to the conversation at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're talking about voter security and voter education here in western Wisconsin. Our guests for the hour have been Salika Duxworth-Lawton of Uniting Bridges of Eau Claire and the American Civil Liberties Union, and Karen Voss of the group Chippewa Valley Votes. We're joined now by Patty Hurd of Siren, who is a member of the League of Women Voters of the Upper St. Croix Valley. She's been involved in organizing some upcoming events in St. Croix, Polk, and Burnett counties. Patty Hurd, welcome to the West Side.
Welcome. Thank you. Good morning.
Now, Patty, the League of Women Voters is staging three events the first week of February that, among other things, celebrates the 100th anniversary of the League of Women Voters. Tell us about those events.
That's right. Yes, I'd like to invite the public. These are open and free events that we are having in each of our three counties that make up the Upper St. Croix Valley chapter for the League of Women Voters. And the idea is to celebrate our 100th birthday, which some people probably don't realize, but the League of Women Voters was actually founded by Carrie Chapman Catt, who was born in Wisconsin. And it was founded on February 14th in 1920. And the whole purpose behind it is they felt a need for the nonpartisan, a nonpartisan civic organization to help educate women, but the public in general also, but especially women who were just getting their right to vote happen. And so along with this is the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment that was ratified in August of 1920. So we're celebrating our right to vote for 100 years. And both of these anniversaries are going to be celebrated with birthday cakes, of course. You can't have a birthday party without a birthday cake. So we'll have cake and coffee. But we also are, the purpose of our league is to educate and to help register people to vote. And it was so interesting listening to some of the earlier speakers you had. We do partner with Barron County for registering their workshop, getting people to be trained on voter registration at their workshop. So we are aware and encouraging our members to also attend their training on January 28th. But our events are going to be held all over Wisconsin and all over the nation. I believe we have a national day of action that's called Women Power the Vote. And over 750 communities around the nation, there'll be different events. And what we've selected to do is to provide some information about the census, because this is 2020 is the year of the census. And so we have invited Bob Gullinick from the U.S. Census Bureau, who covers this area, to speak to us for about a half an hour at each of these three different events that we will be having. And then in addition to that, because there's been so many concerns about the election security with Russians' interference in our elections and other issues, we have asked each county clerk in these three counties, in St. Croix Valley and Polk and Burnett, if they would speak about their the election security in their county. And so these events will be held, St. Croix County will be held on February 3rd at Roberts Congregational Church. In Polk County, it'll be February 4th in Balsam Lake Government Center. And Burnett County, it'll be February 6th at the Burnett County Government Center. And so, and they're all from 6:30 to 8. And I know we'll have the information around a little bit. Unfortunately, our website is currently undergoing some changes right now, so we won't be able to post them there, but I hope we will be publicly putting them in the paper and publicizing them with flyers and hopefully have them around on different websites that you can check out.
And as I mentioned, Patty, earlier in the show, we'll try to get that information up on our show page on the west side on Wisconsin Public Radio's site at WPR.org. Patty Hurd, in the 60s and 70s, the League of Women Voters played a prominent role in staging candidate debates. That was back when it was illegal for broadcast stations to host debates. So we relied, those of us in the media, relied on the League for local opportunities to hear legislative and local candidates side by side. The Reagan administration lifted those restrictions, and now most debates, at least on the larger scale, are managed by media. So how do these events that you're staging reflect how the League has evolved in its 100 years?
Well, we still do we call them meet and greets in our area, and I think each area has a little bit different way of approaching it. But the local candidates in each of our areas, it's important that voters get a chance to meet with them and talk to them and answer questions and ask questions. And so we still plan on having several of them. It's going to be a busy year, as you mentioned. Someone mentioned there's five elections, and we will be once the candidates have been narrowed down. We will be having meet and greets in each of these areas for people to come and get to know their local candidates. So we still believe that's very important. We're as some of the other groups have looked at, getting people registered is very important. So we do set up at in the schools also. We go to the libraries. At each of these three events, we will have it, voter registration available if people want to check to see if they are registered or if they're not. If they, we can show them how they do that. We can help them get registered online. So we still continue along that. And the League's purpose has also been to do some education. And so our League up here, this is an area that I feel strongly about. I think it's important for us to know about some of the different things that are happening. We had an education forum a couple years ago on the structuring of our counties and gerrymandering. We also had one on the media literacy and how to spot fake media, fake news. So throughout the year, we try to also squeeze that in. We are limited by the number of volunteers that we can get to help host these events, because it does take a little bit of people power to get these in place. But we still do the education forums, we do the voter registrations, and we also do the candidate forums.
Patty Hurd, thank you for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us. I appreciate this opportunity to talk about the League.
Patty Hurd is with the League of Women Voters of the Upper St. Croix Valley. They're helping organize three events celebrating the 100th anniversary of the League. Those events include one in St. Croix County at the Roberts Congregational Church on February 3rd, the Polk County event at Balsam Lakes Government Center on February 4th, and the Burnett County event at the Siren Government Center on February 6th. All three events begin at 6:30. If you'd like more details, you can email lwvstcroixvalley@gmail.com. And again, we'll try to have that information up on our show page. quickly before we get to a look ahead to the Martin Luther King remembrance on Monday night. She referenced Valentine's Day as actually the 100th birthday of the League of Women Voters, and there's a nationwide day of action called Women Power the Vote. Karen Voss, what's special about the role women play in our democracy?
I think Salika can probably tell you more than me, but I feel very strongly. I can remember my mom was born in a time when women, she got the right to vote, but not her grandmother didn't have the right to vote. It's very self-evident that it is extremely equality and on every level. Whether it is sexual orientation, gender, religious background, your ethnicity, we are all part of this community, and it is all very important that everybody has an equal opportunity to vote, and women have been a very big part of this.
Salika Duxworth-Lawton, as we wrap up today, I want to take a couple minutes to preview the Martin Luther King Remembrance event in Eau Claire a week from tonight. Your organization, Uniting Bridges, is the primary organizer of that commemoration. When people come to St. James the Greater Church in Eau Claire at 6 next Monday night, what are they going to see?
Well, for the first time, the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Civil Rights class, the Upper Division History class, organized the script. Hmm. So they have created two interactive activities for people to come and see. If they're there at 5:30, there will be posters for them to vote on to talk about how these ideas from the past are still infecting us in the present. We still will have Martin Luther King's words. We open and we close with them. But they have chosen to focus on Jim Crow and the Black Coats, to talk about what that looks like, and to talk about James Baldwin's ideas, especially because of the new movie, I Am Not Your Negro, and to talk about how the things he said in 1962 are still important to us today. There will be music from the Eau Claire Collective Choir. There will be Frank Watkins, who will be playing and will have some soloists for us. People will be able to register to vote. People will be able to find services. People will be able to find information. We have a number of community partners who are going to be out there. And the new Eau Claire Police Chief, Matt Rokas, is our keynote speaker, and he will be introduced by Sheriff Ron Kramer. And both will talk about how Eau Claire policing, how they see Eau Claire policing within Martin Luther King's beloved community.
And that's a week from tonight, St. James the Greater Church, 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Hope you'll be there. You don't want to miss it.
That's the voice of Salika Duxworth-Lawton, president of Uniting Bridges, who's been with us for this hour. Also with us through the hour, Karen Voss of the Chippewa Valley Votes organization. Karen Voss, thank you for joining us as well.
Oh, you're so very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
We also heard earlier from Lisa Hind of the Barron County Votes Organization, Patty Hurd of the Upper St. Croix Valley Division of the League of Women Voters, and Sean Johnson, our Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll include links to more information about the events we've talked about on our website at WPR.org. Go to Shows and select the West Side. Catherine Thomas produced today's program. Kate Spranger provided publicity and web support. We're off next week. We'll carry the Martin Luther King programming provided by On Point during this hour. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. Thanks for joining us on the West Side.